They fight like demons, Duncan Idaho says of the Fremen, and in his final moments, so does he. Today I'm talking about Duncan Idaho's last stand from Dune. This is Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Hello, movie friends. Welcome to Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. I am Scott, and today I am talking about Duncan Idaho's Last Stand from the original Dune, now that the second one is in theaters, and I'm sure there's plenty more action where that came from and a bunch of more knife fighting, but this is one of the action standouts of the first movie, so I wanted to give it its own time in the sun because I think it's a good example of how to blend character and themes and action all into one. So without further ado, let's get started. Now that Dune 2 has hit theaters and everyone was convinced that, yes, you can make a Dune movie that looks and feels as epic as the novel, now's a great time to get into something that I was pleasantly surprised by, that Denis Villeneuve can put together some solid action beats. And perhaps no scene highlights that better than Jason Momoa's Duncan Idaho holding out against the Sardaukar car. After a series of betrayals and the murder of their house, Leto Atreides, Paul and his mother Lady Jessica have taken refuge with a Fremen scientist and a handful of allies in a desert outpost. But when Duncan correctly senses that a rival faction, House Harkonnen, has sent the most dangerous fighting force, the Sardaukar, to kill the young man and his mother, Duncan seals off the doors and fights to the death to keep House Atreides alive. So let's get into why it works, starting with build-up and prophecy. It's not uncommon for mentor figures like Duncan Idaho to die fighting in the service of their young ward. This happens half the time in movies like this with this character. What makes this buildup of this movie buildup different is that Paul and the audience have had this death telegraphed from the beginning of the movie. Not even 20 minutes in, Duncan is introduced to the audience with Paul telling him that he saw Duncan die in his dreams. And as the audience quickly learns, Paul's dreams have a nasty habit of coming true. This shifts the question around from Duncan to will he die to when will he die? And we've already seen a number of potentially dangerous situations like the Harkonnen assault on the Atreides base on Arrakis or simply seeking out the Fremen. But when everything goes quiet outside this outpost, it's clear that they're under attack, and who's coming? The Sardaukar. Just like Duncan's death, we've heard about the Sardaukar from Paul's first sparring match with his other mentor, Gurney Halleck. These guys are the Navy SEALs of the Emperor. They come in quickly and quietly, and they don't leave survivors. So when Duncan sees them, calls out their name, and closes and locks the door behind him while giving Paul a salute, we all know what this means. He's not getting out alive. And to add even more hurt on it, Paul's prophecy, one he never wanted to come true, comes to fruition. This also weaves nicely into later versions of potential futures for Paul, since he wants and needs there to be more than one outcome in situations like this. It's also not the first time someone will sacrifice their life for his in this story. Also, there is more to come. This is a detail that will likely hit harder once everyone sees part two, but a big part of Paul's story and a major theme in Dune is unnecessary sacrifice, or rather people throwing away their lives for a sense of duty or larger purpose. Something that seems to get lost in the mix is that Paul doesn't want anyone to die on his account, he doesn't want to rule, he doesn't want to fight, but forces beyond his control keep pushing him to do exactly that. So seeing Duncan sacrifice himself for the sake of the house when he could be by Paul's side is upsetting, if not traumatic. It's a small and forceful reminder that Paul's journey to messianic figure is built less on what he wants or merit versus him being told through words and actions that he is a savior. And now we get into the fun stuff, which is blades and force fields. One of the hardest, weirdest, and hardest aspects to convey on screen from the Dune universe is how hand-to-hand combat works here. Fights with bladed weapons are nothing new for Hollywood stunt people, but the addition of force fields complicates things. The simple and clever solution? Transparency and color coding. Without getting too far down the rabbit hole, once a shield is activated, you don't really see it unless someone engages with it. If it's working, it's blue and repels the attack. If it's not, it blinks red around the impacted area. That's a solid solution to this universe's combat gimmick. That also happens to make it very easy to see how and when Duncan and his foes are getting hit. So as we watch him parry, stab, and grapple with these soldiers, we also see where he's hitting and where he's getting hit. And it also helps amplify his badass finale. Which brings us to the real final stand. Duncan's fight is divided into two segments. The first is his show-off segment, where he takes out an entire platoon of these soldiers single-handedly before being run through by the final soldier, and then killing him as well. So now Duncan is glowing red with a sword through his chest as a close second round of Sardaukar soldiers arrive with a beam to cut through the door he just locked. This is a nice little combination of callback and escalation, since we've already seen a bigger version of this weapon tear through the city in the Harkonnen's attack, and also because we can see that when this tool and weapon is activated, it cuts through everything, including walls. It means Paul and Lady Jessica can't escape yet. So on Death's Door, Duncan pulls the blade from his chest and begins furiously hacking at the second round of soldiers, effectively stopping the cutting weapon and giving the remaining leaders of his house time to get away. It may not have the same emotional stopping power as Boromir's final moments, but it's damn close in terms of sheer will. The verdict is it's short, furious, and impactful. Though the full lead-in and fight only takes less than 5 minutes, this little scene packs a hell of a punch and provides a fitting tragic end for a doomed character. This has been Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to join our Facebook group, Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie World, for the latest reviews, discussions, and more. See you next time, everybody, and stay safe.